Good evening, everyone. It's really lovely to be with you this evening. Church is in the evening, that's fine. I'm talking about Sabbath, and I just want to dispel any myths that I am also really rubbish at this. And so this comes with a huge disclaimer that I am not here at the front telling you how it is and that I'm perfect and I've got it all sorted. I'm rubbish at rest. When I told Sue, my mentor, that this was my topic, she just laughed. I mean, she's laughing now. And because the verse that she keeps telling me this year is, "Be still and know that I am God," with a huge emphasis on the "be still," because I just really struggle to stop and not do anything. You know, give me a free day and I'll make loads of plans to busy myself. And so, yeah, and so this topic is for me to learn through as much as it is. I'm hoping that you guys will learn as well. So lots of you will know that last year I graduated from Nottingham Trent University as a primary school teacher. And if you know any primary school teachers, you'll know that life as a teacher is really demanding. Emotionally, physically, it drains massively on your time. And as well as that, when I was at university, there was always a to-do list. You know, there was always things on that list that were never going to get done. And then also, know me, I had a full social life as well. I was part of the church, I was on the CU exec, I was part of a small group and the choir in my first year. Life was really busy. And as you can imagine, by the end of my second year, I burnt out. And so much so that I actually came out of university. I had to stop teaching altogether and take it some time out to really recuperate. When I went back to university and teaching, this was when I really started a journey of working out what is rest and how can I make a better, more God-focused work and life balance. I'm sure, though, I'm not the only one. We live in a society and a culture that thrives on being busy. How often do you ask somebody, or someone asks you, "How are you?" and someone responds with, "Fine, but busy." It's often the response. We're all busy no matter what we do, no matter what our job is, how much money we have, we're busy. And to a certain extent, that's fine. Jesus was busy. He was busy to that definition. But when we have too much on our plate, when we're doing too much that we literally just cannot handle it on our hands, then it becomes damaging to our souls. One of my favourite authors is John Mark Comer, and he calls this hurry. And he says that hurry leads to us not being able to love our neighbours or God in the way that we are called to. This speed of life is just not Christian, it's Antichrist. This is a quote from that sums up the possible outcome of allowing a busyness to rule our lives. It may be the case that Christians are assimilating to the culture of busyness, hurry and overload, which leads to God becoming more marginalised in Christian lives, which leads to a deteriorating relationship with God, which leads to Christians becoming even more vulnerable to adopting secular assumptions about how to live, which leads to more conformity to a culture of busyness, hurry, overload. Then the cycle begins again. It's quite damaging, that quote. And if you think about it, are we allowing ourselves to be adopting these busyness cultures? Have you ever noticed that when you're in a rush, maybe to leave the house, if you've got families, you might be leaving the house with kids, or maybe you've got a deadline coming up and you're so preoccupied with that, that you become unloving to those around you. Hurry and love are just incompatible. They just don't fit together. You can't do both at the same time. When you're rushing about because you've got too much on your plate, your ability to be considerate to others just goes down. It stops us also from being able to hear God's voice. I'm certainly a victim of this. But I pray and I hope that there's a better way around this, And I hope that the rest of my talk, and we're going to look through the way that God has intended us to live. And we're going to look at Jesus as well, because he's just the ultimate example. So first, God's creation and his ordinance. So when God created the world, Genesis tells us that from absolutely nothing, God created absolutely everything. The heavens, the earth, the animals, the plants, even us humans. It took God 6 days to create the earth, and on the seventh day, God rested. He could have done anything. He's God. He could have gone off and made another world, but he didn't. He stopped and he rested. And it's not because he was tired. Like, he's God. Like, he doesn't need to sit and rest. But as I read it, he stopped and he dwelled among us in his creation. He delighted in his world. God stopped and rested. He could have done a million things, but he stopped and he rested to dwell among us. You might know that Sabbath literally means to stop. The seventh day was set aside for us to stop. You might not know that it also means to delight. When God stopped on that first Sabbath, he delighted in what he had made. He delighted in us, his humans. Adam and Eve, they delighted in God. And when we delight, when we Sabbath, we can delight in the things that he has done for us. There's one more thing. He declares that the day, the seventh day, is blessed and it's holy. Which might seem a bit strange when you first read it. And mainly because the only two things that God blesses in the creation story is the animals and the humans. He says to the animals and humans to multiply and be fruitful. How does that work with the Sabbath? Well, my friend John Mark Kona has something to say about this. And he reckons that when we apply it to the Sabbath, that the seventh day rest has the capabilities of being just as life-giving and fruitful as animals and humans are. No matter how much we enjoy our jobs, by the end of each week, we're physically and emotionally and spiritually drained. Sabbath is our opportunity to stop, turn our eyes back to God, and fill our souls back up with life. God also says that the day is holy. And for the first readers, this was really strange, because they believed that their little g gods existed in holy places like temples and shrines. It didn't exist in a time like a day. But what if our one true God didn't reside in a place that you had to go to, that you had to pilgrim to, that you had to make effort to get out of your house and walk to? But what if he was just in a time and we just had to stop long enough to reside in him? Do you know, that makes me really excited, because that means that I don't even have to get out of bed. I can literally just lie in bed and soak in the presence of God. Maybe you have a favourite seat in your house. You don't have to go anywhere. God just wants to come and meet with you. Have you ever wondered why God decided on a 7 day week? Well, the number seven is spelled with the same Hebrew letters as complete or full. Seven is an image of complete goodness. And we see this all over the Bible. There are loads of sevens all over the Old Testament. And when they appear, it's usually when God is rescuing his people out of darkness and into a period of abundance and rest in his presence. A 7 day week, though, it also works practically as well as biblically. During the revolution in France, I don't know how long ago that was, some time ago, they tried a 10 day working week. And the results, they weren't good. The economy went down, suicide rates went up, and productivity was actually just at an all-time low. This attempt to be more productive by having more time just actually had the opposite effect. The solution isn't more time, more days. Often we think, oh, if we just had another day, another hour. But actually, what we would do is just fill it up with more time, more stuff, and we'd become more busy, and then we'd want another hour on top of that. Interestingly though, for the last 20 years, France have been operating a four-day working week, but people who are working those 4 days still get paid for 5 days. It's to reduce burnout and make workers happier and more productive, and they're more committed to their job. We've seen this more so in England as well, and they've shown that productivity doesn't decrease, but it increases. Employees have more job satisfaction. Actually, maybe when we have more time, we are more inclined to go into our job better. This shows that doing more hours doesn't correlate to productivity. And so we've seen how God intended our working week to be. 6 days work, 1 day rest. I imagine those people working 4 days, they don't just lay on their backs for the rest of those 3 days. I imagine they have laundry and things to do, so they are working on those other days too. God intended for 6 days work, 1 day rest. The order of creation, a rhythm of life that brings grace and us closer to our Creator God. It was modelled by Him in our creation story, and we just had to follow. Unfortunately, because of the fall, we are sinners. And by our sinful nature, we just find it hard to follow the life-giving guidelines that God has given us. And so we see in the Old Testament the Israelites going against what God has asked of him. Earthly things become more exciting, and it led the Israelites to being in exile. God has a plan though, and He wants to rescue us. And so He gives the Israelites the Ten Commandments, a way of life that would see them grow closer to Yahweh. In Exodus 20, which is on our screens, we see the commandment that God has given His people. If you were to look at the commandments in your Bibles, you would notice that actually this commandment is by far the longest of all the Ten Commandments. And I'm quite new to the theology thing. But one of the things that I first learned was that the Bible doesn't have italics or bold type. All the titles, they were added in afterwards. But what you do have is the authors using what they have is their words and the way they write their words to make things sing out and make it loud to us. And so when someone takes a long time to write something and explain each and every detail, that for me is a moment where I'm like, oh, I need to listen to this. And then the other thing is, we go on to the next slide. The Bible Project is awesome. And they showed me that actually this commandment is written in a pattern to make us look and focus in on the middle line. So you'll see that the first and the last line mirror each other and so forth to point you to this middle line, to show us the purpose of His commandment. It reminds us the middle line declares that the Sabbath belongs to Yahweh, to God. It reminds those first exiled Israelites and us that God is the master of time. And the seventh day is a way to declare to God that it's His way and not our way. We as humans are quite egocentric. We can be selfish at times. We think, how can God make this work for me? What is God's plan for my life? When actually, I think it's more like, how do we fit into God's wider plan to bring kingdom on earth? Sabbath is an awesome opportunity to remind ourselves weekly of this. and how we can recenter our lives, refocus our lives, so that God is right bang in the middle of it again. This was God's message to the Israelites, and I believe that it's a message for us too tonight as well. How can we surrender our lives to the way of God so that He becomes the focus once again? So we need to look at Jesus. He is our best role model. And during Jesus' ministry, he often, we see the Pharisees getting upset with him time and time again. We just see it over and over. And often this was because Jesus was seen to be working on the Sabbath. Now the Pharisees, they had lots of rules. They had lots of rules for the Sabbath, but they had lots of rules for everything. And they believed that fulfilling every rule of the Torah would somehow make up for all the rule-breaking that their ancestors had done in the past. Further to this, they also added extra rules. So not only following all the rules in the Torah, they added extra rules just to sort of put a fence around the rules that they were already upkeeping, just to doubly make sure they weren't going to break any rules. This led them to having 619 rules in the from the Torah, plus an extra 1,500 oral rules that they called the Mishnah. It's a lot of rules. The Pharisees really liked their rules, but it was quite constricting. In our passage that Kate read for us, we see the Pharisees accusing our disciples of breaking the law. Thing is though, it's not the Torah that they're on about. They're on about this Mishnah, these extra rules that they'd created. These rules were not made by God. They were made by man. And yes, they came from a good place. They came from a place of them trying to make themselves better. But they weren't from God. They weren't going to lead them to salvation. So when Jesus responds in this passage, it's profound to the Pharisees. It just blows their mind. You see, Jesus says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Often as 21st century Christians, we think that Jesus is against the Sabbath. We think, oh, it's too legalistic, it's part of the law, that's what Jesus came to do away with. But as we discussed, the Sabbath came before any law. It was part of the creation story. It's more like a rhythm of life than a rule. For us, Sabbath is inconvenient. It stops us from doing all the things that we want to do. And it's somehow easier if we have an excuse to write it off. And the Pharisees, they've got so caught up in their rule making that they've forgotten about the roots of the Sabbath. You see, the Sabbath was made for man. Jesus reminds them and us that Sabbath was made for us. Put in another way, Sabbath is a gift from God for us to enjoy. I said earlier that Sabbath means to delight. It's not a series of rules and regulations that we have to adhere to. It's a practice that if we choose to take part in, we will find life and a deeper relationship with God. In the other parts of the Gospels, we see Jesus' healings and miracles take place on the Sabbath. In fact, almost all of his healings take place on the Sabbath. I don't think that this is a coincidence. Jesus recognises that the Sabbath is a day for healing. It's a day when we experience true intimacy with our Father. If you apply this to healing, healing is a sign of God's love for you. Therefore, it makes sense that Jesus heals on the Sabbath. He's showing us that he loves us. Jesus brings ultimate rest and healing to those he performed miracles on, but he also brings ultimate rest and healing to us when we accept him as our Saviour. So, I've talked about Sabbath in the Bible. I've talked about it in Jesus' time. What about Sabbath in our culture? How do we experience that healing rest that Jesus talks about? Well, first, for me, I think we need to identify what work is and what work isn't. Is it what we just do for money, or is it other things as well? What about if your job is vocational? What about if your work is time demanding? These things are all things that we need to consider when creating our Sabbath, our stop day. Where we do only the things that bring us rest and worship. For me, the key question when I'm working out if I'm going to do that activity on my Sabbath is, does this thing bring me life? For some, going for a run would be really restful and restorative. For me, nah. Some people say they like talk to God, they listen to pop. No, it's just not going to be, it's work. For me, at the moment, that is work. But for me, I'm a huge extrovert. I love talking to people. I love hanging out with people. And so for me, every Sabbath has to have some sort of human interaction in there. Our definition of work changes. Our definition of rest changes, depending on who we are and what we enjoy doing. Clearly, though, there are some things that are work. So, you know, going into the office, answering your work emails, I would say doing your laundry. And there are clearly things that are rest, like sleeping, and reading a book in a comfy seat or having a cup of coffee with someone who you feel really comfortable with. It's that grey area where we just don't know. And that's where I suggest you ask yourself that question. Is this life-giving for me? Please don't expect that it will be perfect first time round. I've been trying Sabbath for the last few months and I've barely got any that are perfect. Thankfully, the Hebrew word for Sabbath, Shabbat, is used as a verb in Genesis. And for me, that means that it's something that we can practice. A verb is something that you do continually. And therefore it's a skill that we can hone, we can learn to do. It's also really important to note that Sabbath will look completely different to whoever we are, according to your lifestyle and your household. If you have a family or you're retired, if you're married or you're single, the way you do Sabbath is going to be different, but it all will have one commonality. You will be finding rest, and you'll be called into worship through that. So for me, my 2 days off are Monday and Saturday, and I set aside Monday for my whole household chores. So that's my laundry, it's my cleaning, it's all that kind of thing. Saturday is the day that I try to Sabbath. My ideal Sabbath would look like this, just emphasis on the ideal. So I would sleep in with no alarm, hoping that the children don't wake me up. And then I'd have some prayer and some Bible time. And this would be longer than my usual sort of weekday time. One of the things that I've started using that I really love is Lectio 365, which is an app that 24/7 Prayer have come up with. And I know that it's something that some people in our church are also using. I then go downstairs and I have special breakfast, which in our household is like all the sugary cereal. It's spawn. And then for me, it's about time with people. So I'll either have time with friends, time with my host family, time with my real family, whatever it is, I'll spend some time with people. And hopefully this involves food, some sort of meal together. I like to get outside, do that kind of thing. And I might have some time for myself in the evening, maybe to read a book or to watch a film. The final thing I do is I try and limit my phone use. I try and make sure that at every moment I'm either spending time with God or I'm spending time with people. Your Sabbath, I hope, will look completely different to mine. My key things are quiet time, good food, and good company. But for you, it might be totally different. I want to finish with the words of Jesus. This is from the book of Matthew, and it's very well-known words. But I'm going to read it from the Message version, because when I read this, it really spoke to me, and it really, I just understood it for the first time in a long, long time. I want to pray that you would come to know and come to rest in Jesus, and that you would see that he is our way to true life. I want to finish with another disclaimer. If you go away and you never Sabbath in your whole life, that's okay. But I want to encourage you to try it, because I want to encourage you that if you try it, you might find that you live life more to the full, and that's what Jesus wants for us. So Jesus says in Matthew 11, 28 to 30, "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn from the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." Amen. There are some questions. I know I didn't stop you in the middle. Tough luck. The questions for today is, do you Sabbath? If so, how? Encourage the people on your table. How do you Sabbath? My second question is, if you don't Sabbath or you want something to revive your Sabbath, is what could I do for 24 hours that would fill my soul with a deep throbbing joy? Have a think about what are the things that you love to do. One of the things that I learned about Sabbath as I was preparing for this is that some people make it like Christmas every week so that they really look forward to it. And I think that's right. We should be looking forward to our time of rest. And then finally, and this might be something that you don't share in your tables, but something that you go home with, is what might you need to move around to enable your Sabbath to happen? You might need to make sacrifices. You might need to move your schedule around. But what are the things that are going to have to change if you wanted to adapt Sabbath into your life? Thank you.